C-2. McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. I can't even pretend to understand what just happened, Emma said, reacting to President Slater's comments as the rest of the equally confused group, other than the thoroughly preoccupied Dan, waited eagerly for her interpretation. She's doing what's popular by criticizing the GSC's culture of secrecy and saying Timo should be allowed to contribute, and she's doing what's safe by diplomatically supporting Godfrey's position, but I really don't know what's going on with the contact stuff. It was almost a tease, like she knows something.
Maybe the craft Trey recorded was seen by others? Timo suggested.
No one knew any more on this point, of course, and Dan's trend ticker displayed an appropriate scrolling post from Billy Kendrick, which simply restated his belief that a lot more is going on here than any of us know right now. Dan, for his part, was busy on his computer looking for named stars, which, when viewed from Earth, fell within the relatively small zone revealed on the alien plaque. He had barely taken his eyes off it during the drive back from Salida, and he had barely spoken a word to anyone since getting it down into his basement. The few words he did speak were to Alessandro Bonucci, who had been entrusted with detailed photographs of the plaque and who was already remotely controlling powerful telescopes housed at some of Timo's isolated and well-positioned facilities around the world. While Dan was poring through lists of stars already known to be orbited by other exoplanets, Alessandro was stepping up the detection process. He and countless other astronomers had publicly stated on several occasions that one of the greatest obstacles to detecting exoplanets or alien signals was, quite obviously, knowing where to look for them. With a specific target now in hand, he was able to point much of the world's most expensive and most advanced deep space observation equipment towards an area of the sky which both he and Dan McCarthy now believed to house New Kerguelen's home system. Observation would hold the answers, but one step was necessary before they could pursue off-Earth observation of New Kerguelen and ultimately justify the focused development of the technologies needed to reach the distant world. Before any of that could come to pass, they had to prove it was there. The plaque's map was one thing, but direct and replicable observation was something else. Dan wasn't concerned that Alessandro hadn't reported any findings just yet, since hardly any time had passed. President Slater's televised words had gone in one of Dan's ears and straight out the other, as had Timo's reasonable suggestion that she might have been informed that the messengers had briefly flown over Montana in the moments after the widely observed satellite burn-up.
"Dan," Clark called, finally getting his attention. "What do you think?"
He looked over and saw a series of confused faces, some of their expressions bordering on concern.
What do I think about what?
Emma walked over to Dan and sat in the chair next to him before succinctly recapping Slater's key points.
"What I think about that is that she doesn't know about this,"
he replied after hearing it all out, more relaxed than anyone else. "If the messengers were spotted by anyone else, they wanted to be. They don't make mistakes. They wanted us to find the plaque first, and we did. But see, that's the thing. They wanted there to be a plaque. They could have just told me where to look for New Kerguelen or made me draw this star map like they made me draw the road map to Lolo. Remember? In the cornfield? And they wanted there to be a plaque because they want everyone to know this came from them. This way there's no debate. There's no one saying I'm crazy or an attention-seeking publicity hound or anything else like that. I don't know why we had to find it first, and I don't know why they didn't just leave it at Walker's place when they took him. That way, we would have had it without needing to get the feathers involved. But what I know for sure is that the messengers don't do things for no reason, and they don't make mistakes."
"It could be a trail of credibility or something like that," Tara said.
Dan nodded. "Maybe. We don't know, but they do. That's what counts." Timo, still partly running on Italian time, found himself gazing at Dan's bed as Slater's face left the screen and the Blitz News analysis team took her place.
"So, as for tonight, should I call a driver at the hotel or..."
"No need," Emma answered.
"Oh, really?"
Clark interjected, a boyish lilt in his voice.
"So where will Dan be spending the evening?"
Tara tried not to laugh.
"Give us a break, man," Dan said. "Things are complicated enough. Just dial down on the Clark, okay?"
Emma gently squeezed Dan's hand, despite the other's attention rather than because of it.
This isn't complicated, she told him, looking into his eyes before turning to Clark. But yeah, dial down on the Clark. We're not in middle school.
Clark chuckled dryly at having his own words of several days earlier fired back in the opposite direction. He then turned more serious as he looked at them. It was an awkward kind of seriousness, and one he wasn't at all used to.
And, obviously, I care about both of you a lot, he said, his voice less resonant and sure of itself than normal. So just, you know, be careful not to get hurt or whatever.
They knew what he meant and understood the sentiment behind his words, as inarticulate as the words themselves may have been.
And Emma, be careful, Tara added with a wink, greatly elongating the word careful for the sake of lighthearted emphasis. Because, you know, at your age, 32, Emma said, rolling her eyes at Tara's attempt at humor.
Tara held a finger to her lips and whispered,
People can hear you.
A hint of a grin appeared on Emma's face, despite her best efforts not to let Tara know that her joke had landed a hit.
Anyway, we've all had a long day, a long week.
Clark stood up, able to do so without too much pain as his injuries from the previous night continued to fade. He struggled to believe that only 24 hours had passed since he ran into the messenger's force field, and Emma's mention of a long day was putting it lightly to say the least.
It's so weird going to bed knowing that we found what we were looking for, Tara said. Like, what do we do now?
Sleep, Clark suggested.
Good plan, she replied, heading for the stairs while Dan, as exhausted as anyone else, once again disabled the basement's access controls for Timo's benefit before powering down his computer and picking up the plaque to keep it safely by his side.
Alessandro might call this phone if he has any status updates, Timo said. Should I answer it?
Yeah, if it's him, Dan said. No one else should call. Hardly anyone even has the number. But if they do, don't pick up. Call me and I'll come over.
What if I see anything important on TV? Clark asked. Do you want me to call you too?
Dan shrugged.
If by important you mean something we actually need to act on, then yeah, obviously. But not if it's just the usual crap on the news.
Nothing much will happen tonight, Emma predicted. Alessandro is doing his thing, and Slater's sideshow is probably going to kick off in the meantime, with everyone talking about what she might know about contact. But that's what it'll be for now, talk. Alessandro sounded pretty confident that he would have something quite soon, so I don't think there's going to be time for any major trouble to get going before he does. I think the worst is over.
Oh, definitely, Dan stressed, climbing the stairs. I'd even say that all of the bad stuff is over, not just the worst of it. Well, maybe except for some neck pains, if or when the messengers ever finally feel like showing up for real.
Emma laughed.
I wasn't joking, Dan said, lowering his voice. I still think they're coming back.